Hi, Stably.
Hi, Jerry.
How you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good. Let me just say before we continue, death to the fascist insect that preys upon the life of the people.
Right on.
Stably, we're here today to discuss your pick, Days of Rage, America's Radical Underground, the FBI, and the Forgotten Age of Revolutionary Violence by Brian Burrow, which is a book that I had read a few years back.
Me too.
You too. You also remember reading it? Yeah.
Okay. I think I was the one that told everyone to read it.
Probably.
He owes me money.
Why do you want to reread it?
I don't know. I just it's a good book. Spoiler alert. I enjoyed it at the time. It's in turn shocking and funny.
Yeah.
And I've been wanting to reread it for a while. And with just all the latest happenings, as the kids call them, not so many bombings, I guess, but, you know, various assassination attempts and whatnot.
Yeah.
I thought it'd be interesting to take a little trip back in time.
And, okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's interesting. Okay. Well, maybe we should compare and contrast in a minute.
Yes, as part of the assignment.
Yeah. And bonus toward the end, I guess, we're also going to discuss Network, the 1976 Sidney Lumet masterpiece written by Paddy Chayefsky.
Oh, were we supposed to watch that? I watched Undercover Brother instead. I'm ready.
All right.
I'm ready with that, but never heard of Network.
Never. Okay.
Yeah.
So Stably, how do you wanna discuss this? We can go communique by communique.
Yeah, I think we need a list of dramatis personae or whatever first.
Yeah.
The various names and their aliases.
Can I just say that's one thing that I think so rereading this book for the purposes of discussing it on this podcast. You know, when I mean, not to give too much away, not to open the kimono too far, you know, but when I read a book for pleasure, as opposed to this podcast,
as opposed to your job, your work,
my work, you know, you read it differently, right? So when I'm reading a book for the podcast, I'm like a more forward leaning as opposed to reclining. I will maybe highlight, maybe take notes that I otherwise wouldn't. And I try to remember. I make a concerted effort to try to remember because I know I'm going to have to discuss this. And with this book, I just gave up halfway through. I'm like, I can't keep track of all these fucking people. It's a lot of people and a lot of quote-unquote organizations and
yes,
and a lot of moments in time. And
a lot of dates.
A lot of dates.
Overlapping. Overlapping dates. Yeah.
Yeah.
I agree. So maybe this, instead of going like line by line, blow by blow and chapter by chapter, let's, you know, this can be one of those podcasts. We're going to have to talk about our feelings, our impressions.
Yeah.
It's the overlapping dates. It's not the longest book in the world, but it's a long book. There's a lot of incident, right? And it's interesting because when you like look back at it, it's basically like, what? I mean, yes, it stretches like into the 80s and into the late 70s, but the bulk of it, a lot of it, is really like compressed. It's like, like basically 1970 to 75 or so.
And
I mean, yes, it
pretty much, yeah.
When your cousins from the island show up, it does stretch further.
I was about to say,
yeah, but still, like, it feels kind of like.
Let's take a step back for the listeners' benefit.
Further back.
After all, it's for whom we're doing this. Isn't it? So this book is about radical underground groups in the 70s, basically from about 69 to, it goes into 85, but really established as, you know, it's like the 70s, 70s, 79. Is really it. And it is the Weather Underground, the Black Panthers, the Black Liberation Army, the Symbionese Liberation Army, the FAL, PLN, which is a Marxist Puerto Rican independence group, etc.
Yeah.
So that's yeah. what, you know, did I say the Weather Underground? kind of.
They were the first. You forgot the Ecumenical Liberation Army.
Yes.
Yeah.
So that's who we're talking about. So go ahead. I just wanted to make that clear.
Yes. Yeah. So this is what the book is about. Under not just like, you know, these are names and organizations I'm sure a lot of people have heard of, but, you know, specifically it's underground, meaning, you know,
fugitive.
That's a fancy way of saying like you're on the lam, mm-hmm. and you are a bunch of terrorists, basically. Well, I mean, at best you're reaching the point of terrorist or some sort of revolutionary, and it's you know, saying all that, it's just very interesting that the book is full of so much happening, and most of it takes place over such a short span of time, and like the relevance of these people is even shorter than that. If you really kind of like it becomes more and more obvious that like at a certain point they've lost like all touch with reality, especially the Puerto Ricans. And it's just like you don't know whether like laugh or cry, because like, are you just crazy? Are you just thugs? Are you ideologues? It's very interesting. Yeah.
Yeah, and in many cases, it's
all three.
It's all. So I was actually going to say, in some cases, it's clearly one or the other.
Yeah.
Even though some people are confused about it, but in many cases, it's all three. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we can just go to the beginning.
Screw it. Just
screw it. Right. So, like, Jerry, talk, yeah. Jerry, let's wrap.
Yeah.
Why are they doing any of this? All these people. What are they doing? Right. Essentially, they're mostly blowing things up, mostly at night, mostly without hurting people, mostly. And to finance these activities, they are either robbing banks or department stores, or I don't know, getting money from their stupid, idiotic, red diaper baby muling liberal parents and friends.
Right.
In general, the white people seem to mostly get money from their upper middle class family and friends.
And Jane Fonda.
Yeah, I mean, usual, just like disgusting. They're not even boomers. They're like pre-boomers, whatever. Those people. The people we love, you know, Jane Fonda, who's fighting for free speech now or something, still alive. So that's what they're doing. But why are they doing it, Jerry? What's the reason?
I mean, I don't think there's an overarching reason for everybody. Right. So I see three big reasons. Right?
Yeah.
Maybe four.
No. Okay.
Reason number one has to do with like the Black Panthers and the Black Liberation Army and the family, maybe, et cetera. And this has to do with they are angry Black men, typically, except for the sainted Assata Shakur. Mm-hmm. We'll get to. I think they are angry Black men who are basically Malcolm X. Inspired, right? So basically the idea is enough singing, let's start swinging, right? Like, so a rejection of Martin Luther King, and especially after he gets assassinated, like saying like this, you know, this is not going to work. The only thing that's going to work is revolutionary armed violence, right?
Yeah.
So that's one. Kind of like a Venn diagram of all those groups is just outright criminality.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So it's just gang members and just criminals who want to steal and plunder and rape and murder, but they discover, you know, and it's hard to disentangle what's in their minds, right? But they discover a convenient justification for what they're doing in Marxism, right, and revolutionary language, and they also discover that they can get a lot of white
women
yes a lot of useful idiot support if they cloak in this language. So that's 1.5 motivations.
Yeah.
For the then you have like the weather underground types. And these people in particular are just you know, bourgeois. you know, why are they doing it? I think they're doing it for status.
Okay.
And I think status there comes from supporting the black cause, right? And I think it's, you know, it's a little bit about the yeah. So I mean, it's just typical. They read a lot of Che. Right. They see, yeah, you know, it's a civil rights moment, and just you have that. And then lastly, you have the FALN, which is kind of its own thing, and that basically is a creature of Cuban intelligence. So that's what that is.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. At least according to the, there are obviously like people like the Puerto Ricans, right? The FALN, they're Puerto Rican independence revolutionaries, even though seemingly no one in Puerto Rico actually wants independence. No. So they're really pushing on a closed door because, yeah, it's like, why are you doing this?
Nobody there was wants one, this. There was one moment where he quotes some people after another bomb went off. Mm-hmm. There were like people outside of the saying like, oh, it's a Puerto Ricans. It's oh, who do, you know, so who is it this time? Oh, it's a Puerto Ricans. What do they want? You know, they want freedom for Puerto Rico. And they're like, isn't Puerto Rico free already?
No, it's suppressed. It's suppressed and suppressed, even though they seemingly want to keep voting to remain part of the United States.
Yes.
Yeah. But anyway, yeah. At least according to my reading, right, there is a little bit of like Vietnam War stuff and just general commie pinko nonsense about America being an imperialist fascist pig dog state, but
racist.
It seems to be like it's the plight of the blacks, it's black liberation. That's what most of these people settle on, and that's the main justification, the main sticking point in a lot of their conflict, and the thing that makes it seem cool, right?
Yep.
It's just this this thread that goes through it. Like, they just think black militants are so cool. And
by the way, this is not conjecture on the part of the author or our part. This is literally the participants discussing this in their own words, in their own memoirs and interviews with the author.
Yeah.
Especially the women saying, wow, we just like the glamour, the, you know, we were just like gaga over black prison, you know, black convicts.
Yeah.
And we thought the black convicts were the only ones who could lead a revolution.
Right.
And we would just like do whatever they wanted.
I mean, thank God, because if they had been any smarter, like they could have actually done anything like real damage. But yeah, so that's just, it's, I didn't remember that. Right. I remember like reading the book.
Yeah.
And like, oh yeah, they just had their various reasons, Vietnam and just general commie nonsense. And like, obviously like the Panthers and black militants have their own reasons, and then there's the Puerto Ricans. The family were pro-Quebec separatists. I just forgot. Like, no, he's just like got a French last name, but he's like from Maine. Yeah, but like the thread throughout with the like the main justification is smashing the racist American state, and you can talk about other things, it seems, but like the only thing that really gets the juices flowing is America's racist, or the prisons are racist, or everything is racist. So how little things have changed.
But and I mean, yeah, and this is I think it's either Bill Ayers or Jones, I forget his first name,
Jeffrey Jones, not Jeffrey the Jones. Disgraced actor
who was basically saying, yeah, you know, we use the war as a way to gather, you know, a lot of young kids who were getting drafted, right, were anti-war, and that's what really got them motivated. It's like, yeah, we would use the war to get recruits, to get people in the tent, but what we're really about was the black cause. And here's a quote from Kathy Wilkerson, who, you know, was an SDS leader and then a whether, like, she, I guess she was at the townhouse when it blew up. She says, quote, "I think in our hearts," and this is what she's saying in 2016 or whatever, when she was interviewed, quote, "I think in our hearts, what all of us wanted to be was a Black Panther." That was the, and by the way, anyhow, yeah, go ahead.
No, no, what was your anyway?
Just also how later on when they kept having these different conferences to try to bring together all the different strands of the left, really the Trump card was always held by the Blacks and the other racial groups who, if they didn't get their way, would just say, "You're being racist." And ultimately it was because the Black Panthers sided with Dorn that they won out the struggle for SDS.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just like, it's just mind boggling. I mean, I remember just sitting there, you know, I'm reading this book and it's like, but why? Like, you know, to me, it's always like, yeah, but who says? And it does seem like under all of that, like Ivy League rhetoric and the smarminess and the revolution, it's just like, what a bunch of dorks. What a bunch of asshole losers who picked like the dumbest, most thuggish, most criminal element and decided, like, you're in charge now. And we're just going to let you dictate, by the way, like, not just calling people racist, but just like, oh, we're just going to like beat you up. We'll kill you. It's like, and then like, oh, how revolutionary.
I understand why. I mean, I understand it. I I'm not justifying it, but I understand it. The situation that Blacks were facing at that time in the 60s, right? And that was newly on TV.
You mean getting better every year with the passage of
okay
you know what I mean? I'm just saying, like, sure, but the fact is, like, you went, like,
you went
with the people who are like all obvious criminals.
Look, I understand but there's somebody we've been reading recently who makes this argument, which is especially at that time, okay, you were sold a bill of goods about what this country is about, right? It just won World War II, right? This country's about something. And then you're seeing on TV the lie, okay? What you're perceiving to be the lie. And when you're 18 or 20 or whatever, and you're reading Che Guevara, and you're in this moment, and there are revolutions everywhere, you're like, you know, right. And so then once you're in that space, once you're in that headspace, to resist anything from the oppressed that you're trying to help makes you the Hitler, right? Like, so you can't.
Yeah. I mean, right? It all seems very like purposeful, and I'm not sure I buy it. That's the line of thinking, but maybe that's what the justification was. I think it's
a psychodrama.
They just want violence. They loved violence.
I mean,
this was like a little fit of pique for them, like, and they found the most violent people they could to be in charge. It's just like, what a dumb way of doing what a dumb way of doing anything.
But again, I don't think these people were serious, right? I think they were play acting. I think it was about status, as I was saying. Right. I mean, the fact that the orgies were a giveaway.
Yeah, that's true.
Right. Yeah. This was teenage play acting, and I think it's just a psychodrama.
Yeah, well, I guess so. Yeah, sure, maybe we're just saying the same thing. I'm just always like, thought you guys were smart, but I guess you weren't, because if you were, you wouldn't be doing this. So like, you're already
smart, and they're smart, right?
Well,
right,
I mean, Yeah. I mean, but this is like bad idea genes. Like, well, you're only in Haiti once. Might as well. It's like, okay. Sure. Sure, Jerry. Sure. Well, should we give any kind of like rough chronological outline? I mean, like, this is what the book is about, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I mean, there's just so much, right? The book begins with the explanation of like, this is ultimately deep down all about the fight for like Black militancy, right? Everything is more or less driven by Black militancy, which is driven by the plight of Black Americans, African Americans, whatever term we're supposed to use, BIPOCs, in America, not necessarily in the 70s and 60s, but just, you know, prior to that, prior to all the civil rights legislation and Martin Luther King, things were not great for Black people in America, North or South. So, you know, a lot of charismatic Black men decided we're not going to just do the normal thing of boycotts and marches and writing our congressman. We're going to, you know, create a Black state or have a revolutionary war or whatever, or just kill people. So there are various stages of like Black militancy. The most important being, of course, Malcolm X, Nation of Islam, super charismatic, you know, incredibly popular, you know, gets assassinated. I mean, by the way, assassinated by fellow Nation of Islam goons, right? I think everyone thinks like white people killed him. Maybe the police or the FBI were behind it, but seemingly these are, in a lot of these cases, actually, when you're like reading through and like you read like, oh, the Panthers decided to launch an action after the March 12th incident. And it's like, oh, the police must have like shot a bunch of people. And it's like, no, that was just like a Black Panther was murdered by other Black Panthers. And it's like, what? Okay.
But I will say that when there was the split, and basically the Black Liberation Army is essentially the New York chapter of the Black Panthers.
Yes.
That split. Yep. Right. And that split was basically precipitated by the FBI stoking the rivalry between was it Cleaver and Huey Newton, right? And they would basically plant fake communications to give each other the impression.
I think that was pushing on an open door. But yes, there was a lot of
there was
a lot of skullduggery.
Yeah, but you could. I think you could completely, reasonably say that the Black Liberation Army results from FBI action there.
How dare you, Jerry? Very MAGA talking point.
Which we should talk. We should come back to at some point. The FBI's role in all of this.
Yes.
That is in the title of the book, right?
It is in the title of the book. Yep. Not so much in the book, but it's in the title of the book. Yeah. So, you know, this is the general milieu. And then enter a bunch of like white, annoying, obnoxious young adults from various Ivy League institutions like Columbia.
I'm sorry to keep interrupting, but can I say, and this is something that jumped out to me also reading this phenomenon of the white radical underground is an East Coast and Midwestern phenomenon. We always think it's a West Coast phenomenon, but it's not.
Right.
Who are these people? It's Columbia and it's Chicago.
Yes.
Okay. And then they moved to Haight-Ashbury or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's not where this came from.
Right. So something that the author makes pains, right? Is these are not hippies.
No,
like hippies are hippies, right? They're like flower power, blah, 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 a lot of weed, just kind of like listening to music and probably maybe they kill Sharon Tate. Who knows? But, you know, like the Mansons are not hippies either, right? Not really. The hippies are kind of like dying out by this point anyway, and they're not politically active revolutionaries. These are politically active revolutionaries that, you know, do a lot of drugs, but they're very focused on, you know, revolution and whatnot. So these are not hippies. They, like Jerry said, don't come out of like San Francisco or Berkeley or, you know, Santa Monica or Santa Barbara. These are people living in Chicago, New York, all over the place. But They're all very bright, very well spoken, very wealthy, which I think helps a lot. A lot of them are, especially mm-hmm. the leaders. And, you know, they're imbibing the culture of the day. They become radicalized. Some are Vietnam War veterans. Some are just, you know, struggling. And they, again, this is not a lot of people also. This is something to mention. It's like,
yeah.
Yeah. All told, there must be like a few thousand people that
flitted
in and out of this in any capacity.
In any capacity.
It's either like being underground or helping those who were underground. Yeah. It might be a few hundred, right? And in a city or a city, well, even a city, but a country of like 200 plus million people, right? This is not about the peace movement or anti-war protesters, right? Those are those people. These are like the real hardcore who blow things up. So, you know, you get Weatherman, it's a long, complicated story with a bunch of people whose names start with J. There's a lot of Johns and Jeffs and JJs. And, you know, it's well worth reading, but I certainly cannot remember it to explain a chapter and verse. But these are like student radicals. These are people at Ivy League, at Columbia. You know, they're upset about the war, supposedly. They're upset about police cruelty and racism towards blacks. Towards the end, you get a little bit of feminism and like gay liberation creeping in. But these are, you know, these are the people that the dude is hanging out with, essentially, right? They're mm-hmm. the ones who are writing Port Huron statements and whatever else. I don't even remember. And they decide we're going to become revolutionaries. We're going to go underground, which essentially means we're going to become fugitives and start bombing things and issuing communiques. They're not very good at it. They're not very good at running secret organizations either. They very, very quickly, after going underground, blow themselves up. This is the famous townhouse incident where
they blow themselves up. Literally and metaphorically.
Yes. Metaphorically, it's also they blow themselves up because, again, you have 50,000 people in an anti-war march. There's like five of them who are willing to go underground. Maybe a few thousands who are like, right on, man. But then when you like blow yourself up and also like kill people, you know, almost everybody is like, yeah, this is not really what we're down with. So they are, you know, kind of incompetent, very, very sure of themselves, but also like not. There's a lot of psychodrama, as Jerry said. A lot of orgies, a lot of drugs. Like maybe don't be on drugs while trying to build bombs. I don't know. That's just me. Not serious people, right? These are just like, looking back at it, it's like, yeah, what a bunch of like asshole clowns.
And young.
And very young. Yeah. And this other thread, in addition to just, you know, this is a story of black liberation, essentially. The other thread is that the permissiveness, right? These are baby boomers. But like the baby boomers didn't just come out of somewhere, right? It's their parents, it's their families. It's just like this, the whole society is just so permissive at all levels. Mm-hmm. Like the parents are just like, oh yeah, I hope my daughter stops being an underground murder fugitive and goes back to law school. And it's like, well, good luck, I guess. Now, some of that is because they come from radical families. It's not really talked about too much, but there are some people who are like red diaper babies, essentially. And just the rest seem to be kind of permissive. We want to be hip with the kids type parents that just have no idea what these are basically children still, what their kids are up to. It's like you're at Columbia and all of a sudden you're arrested. Like, what the fuck is happening? Like, I'm not sure that it seemingly rarely comes up. So like the townhouse incident, they don't own this townhouse on the Upper West Side. It belongs to the parents of one of the weathermen. I think it's Kathy Wilkerson, right? And I think, is it not?
She was there, but I don't think it's her parents.
Okay, maybe it's the Bodwin or whatever. It's so hard to keep track. They're both named Kathy. Like the dad goes on vacation to the Bahamas and like she says, oh, I'm sick, daddy. Can I stay at your beautiful townhouse? And he's like, yes, daughter, I have my suspicions because you're in an underground bombing ring. But yes, you can stay here with your disgusting friends. And then they just blow it up and she's nearly killed. And it's so permissive, just like the parents, the friends, despite living in like a fascist dictatorship, the cops, it's like Keystone Cops all the time. Like they, as the book points out, like the only real lasting legacy of these people is like metal detectors everywhere, right? Because it used to be you could just like wander in to the Pentagon or
public buildings were public, yeah.
Or public bill, yeah. Public buildings were like, oh, I'm here at the New York Corrections Office. I'm just going to take the elevator to the 7th floor and like poke around. Don't mind me. So just an incredibly permissive society with a lot of high social trust, presumably, that these people managed to wreck. It's just like, anyway, just reading the book, it's like amazing that like, because we compared to now, it's like, yeah, these kids were just like summer camp. They're just like wandering off doing whatever they wanted. And like, you could never get away with this now. Well, maybe. It's just like you would be caught immediately, presumably, and actually sent to prison. So anyway, that's the Weathermen. They're kind of schmucks. They're really high in their own supply. They blow themselves up and they run away and hide. They have various sessions about what to do. They try to come back. It's all kind of like really embarrassing.
And it's all constant.
Yeah.
Internecine.
Yes.
Petty struggles.
Petty struggles in a group that's like 12 people. Because like, you know,
they really think that they are fighting for the leadership of the vanguard of the revolution.
Right? Yes, there's a lot of that. So the Weathermen comes out of SDS, the Students for a Democratic Society. So like the geniuses that they all think they are, they like blow up SDS, not literally, but they blow up SDS on their way out and say like,
that's no, part of the figure.
And then they blow themselves up and they're like, oh, we need outside help. But it's like, well, you just, literally like 6 months ago, you threw everyone into the garbage.
But at the same time, these people like Bernadine Dorn are not, I mean, so I think she is a sociopath, right? Just to start.
I think a lot of these people, yeah.
Her in particular. Yeah. But I think that I understand where their self-conception comes from.
Hold on, Jerry, let me just dial 911.
Because I think they're constantly told at every turn how awesome they are, right?
Yeah.
Especially by you know, an older generation. And who are these people, right? Because
yeah, that's my question. Like, who are you people?
Yeah.
Well, they're the boomers, right? So Bernadine Dorn, exactly. All these, they're the boomers. So like, everyone says like, oh, these fucking boomers. And it's like, well, wait, who enabled them? Like, right. Where's like, I don't want to sound like an old man.
It's all these radical lawyers.
Who, oh, the lawyers, Jerry. Yeah, sorry.
Adored the, you know, these young idealists, revolutionaries, and they would just adored them and would give them money and would fundraise for them and would get them out of jail. And
You know, it like, again, you know, it's not necessarily that they're not 100% wrong, right? The Vietnam War is a disaster. Like it's awful. Mm-hmm. People don't want to do this anymore. They don't understand like, why is this happening? Why am I being drafted? Well, none of these people are being drafted. They're in college, but I've heard of stories of other people being drafted. I mean, some of these are veterans, right? So like this is going on. It's not great. I mean, a lot of people don't like it. Racial tension, discrimination, all these other things.
Nixon's no saint. You have assassinations.
They didn't start the fire, right? You kind of get it, but is it really that bad? But I guess it's like, that's the point, like these are like a few dozen people who have just gone underground. And Jerry says like a lot of it is just seemingly just driven by personality. Mm-hmm. And also just like, they think they've reached a tipping point and they just can't go back. And that happens very early for them, because they're actually like thinking about this stuff. Unlike like the BLA, who is just 99% like violent, murderous criminals. Mm-hmm. These people think of themselves as, you know, they're cadres, they're the vanguard, they're intellectuals. And they've kind of dug themselves into a really deep hole. So they kind of feel like, well, we can't leave. this life because I don't want to go to jail. It's basically that. So mm-hmm. we're just, and I mean, it kind of, for a lot of people, going back to Weatherman, and we'll move on to the other people, it's not a great life. They're living in poverty. But for some of them, like Bernadine Dorn and Jeff Jones, and maybe the Ayers brothers, right?
Boudin.
Boudin, they have a nice, Boudin's
mom.
Yeah, that's right. They have a nice cozy cottage, on the coast. It's like not that bad. They're hanging out with radical lawyers and getting all the best weed. And like Jerry said, like there is like a status to this thing in their own world. And, you know, that's where everyone lives. They live in their own world. So in their world, for a while there, it was very high status. I don't know. I think, yeah, they kind of got in. They definitely got in over their head, and they will all admit that after the fact. But that's Weatherman. Like, they shine briefly, but bright. And then kind of the rest of the, that's like the first few chapters. And then the rest of it is them kind of trying to come back and failing at every turn mm-hmm. and just thinking like, oh, what communique can we write that's going to bring us back? And all the people that we basically fucked over are going to welcome us back as their new leaders. And it's like years and years of them trying to think, because, you know, they're all at Ivy Leagues, like, oh, if only we write a good copy. If only we have good SEO, people will welcome us back and we can lead them to something. It's never really explained. Right. So there's a lot of like kind of hilarious, dumb antics for those people. That's Weatherman. I think that's a lot of what everyone knows. Like, oh, Weatherman is like, everyone kind of knows what they are. Maybe. I'm old, so who knows? And then we get onto like the real movers and shakers. Really, it's like the Panthers, but really like the BLA, the Black Liberation Army. You know, the Panthers are the Panthers. Again, hilariously, everyone involved in the Panthers who are Black are all criminals.
Like literally.
Like literal criminals. Like, it's like, oh, he was a really smart kid. He paid for his college by robbing people. And I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I understand it's not great. And I'm sure it was terrible. Not just not great, but like, you know, the police are racist, all these things. But like, maybe the fact that like you're constantly being hassled by the police has something to do with the fact that you're constantly committing crime. like you're robbing people all the time. Like, what? Yeah, you're in jail because you like rob people like seven times and they finally put you in jail.
What was, what's Cleaver's first name? Is it George?
Eldridge.
Eldridge, Jesus. Eldridge Cleaver.
Eldridge, Jesus
Cleaver. I can't really forget. So he wrote, which ties into Network. It's kind of funny. He wrote Soul on Ice.
Yes.
Which was a bestseller. And
was it a prison memoir?
Kind of, yeah. It was like a prison memoir / revolutionary tract.
Yeah.
/ you know, Black separatist kind of tract, etc. That was, you know, just lauded by the white liberal intelligentsia, right? Like, this is like the radical chic, you know, like whatever. So you have Soul and Ice. And one of the things he talks about in Soul and Ice is how he got started when he was like very young. He was a teen. And he talks about how, you know, he felt oppressed by the whites, et cetera. And he talks about how he would at night leave his side of the tracks and go rape white women.
Yes, this is a revolutionary act.
He said quote, he described his rape of white women as his first revolutionary act.
Yes.
And he would do this. He would just like have, you know, he would say, oh, today I'm going to do this. And he would go and he would just rape white women and then run away and come back.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what he.
Yeah. So, you know, that's maybe a more extreme version of like what most or all of these people were kind of up to.
But this is the text from which the BLA flows.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the Panthers. You know, again, they're not completely wrong. It's a racist society. Dare we say white supremacist society, Blacks, not just criminals. But I mean, let's be honest, it's mostly criminals getting hassled by the police. Like, most normal people are not getting hassled by the police. I don't think most normal Black people particularly care for the Panthers or their antics. It's funny, you see pictures in the book, and it's like people being arrested and you look at the cops and it's like, wait, it's like half of them are black or Hispanic. It's like, I wonder if they were in on it too. But anyway, we digress. There's the Panthers, you know, they're very cool. They're very black. They have their leather and their afros. And, you know, they're trying to set up their own kind of revolutionary thing. It, again, these people don't know what they're doing. It all kind of, it's difficult to say, but like, I think if you just line this up on like a dateline or like a timeline, it all descends into like anarchy very quickly. These people don't get along. They continue to engage in like criminal behavior, and get into conflicts with the police, and some of them get murdered. Some of them murder police. They go to prison. White liberals and white lawyers are like, release him. He's a revolutionary. It's like, he just like shot a cop because of, he got pulled over. anyway. So, there are various chapters around the country. There's like the main chapter in Oakland, and then there's the New York chapter. The New York chapter is much more militant, because there's always a militant fringe, even if you're a militant group. There's a split eventually, long, complicated story of people like running away and moving to Algeria. And there's a split, and the New York Panthers kind of go on their own. There's a civil war. There's a lot of people getting murdered. The FBI might be kind of stirring the pot. Might be, Jerry. Might be. For the greater good. And out of that split, out of the New York Panthers, it grows the Black Liberation Army. It is, again, headed by various morons. I'm sorry. Like, these people, I mean, they know how to read, and I'm sure they're very charismatic, but they're petty criminals. They don't seem particularly bright. It is, the more you read it, it's like, just, this is like not necessarily benign neglect, because the NYPD is not very benign, but it's just like these things are left to kind of fester because it's the 70s and like we don't have computers, people don't have a way of tracking movement. It's just kind of all out of control. It's a very crazy society that's kind of spinning out of control, especially in New York. So a bunch of morons, half of whom, most all of them actually have criminal records, like they all met in jail, create like an underground murder army called the Black Liberation Army. And they think the best way to like get their point across is to start murdering cops, which they do, which the NYPD loves. And so they're immediately like put in the crosshairs of like everybody with a gun in law enforcement. And it doesn't take too long for like, you know, they either all get caught or murdered, and some of them escape. And the hijinks keep going because they create new cells of like seven people, right? Like, it's this never ending, you know, it's like an organism, splintering, I guess. Right? Yeah. Yeah. But like, they can never, the police and the FBI, we can talk about the FBI, like, they can never really like nail these people because the author is telling a story. Right. But it's one thing to like write some journalism. It's another thing to like go to a court of law and convict someone and actually put them in jail for this stuff. Like, a lot of the story, I think, comes from after the fact. People are finally talking about what they did. So, you know, there's various like incredibly violent people that are part of this organization. They're not really doing anything except trying to kill the police. This is where, so the famous,
the party.
Yeah.
It's a gang. It's a street gang that happens to, you know, that figured out that they could use this Marxist language, right? You know, either cynically or genuinely, it doesn't really matter. And so they're treated as this, you know, revolutionary army.
Yes.
if they had been called the 34th Street Kings, right?
Yeah.
I don't, you know, there would be very little difference to what they got up to, which is bank robbery and police killing.
Yeah. Yeah. This is where the radical chic party at Leonard Bernstein's penthouse comes from. The New York Panthers like write out very smart. They write out their plan of how they're going to kill all the police and like blow New York up. And looked up on Wikipedia. This might have all been instigated by the police informants and their rank, but whatever. So the Panthers, like the Panther 21 trial is going on, and the party at old Lenny's place is in support of the Panthers, those Panthers. So, you know, that's the other, I mean, we've talked about this threat is like, it's so cool, right? all of these like loser aging white people just absolutely love this so-called culture of essentially like criminals, right? Who they would never actually have at their house if it wasn't like tangentially related to politics and being cool. Like, I presume if like people like this showed up at one of their little Tony clubs, they would immediately call security. But because it's like, oh, this is cool and political, please come to my house and tell me like what a horrible white insect I am. So anyway,
here's a quote from from again the part on Eldridge Cleaver, which I just found. What I liked about Eldridge Cleaver is
go on, Jerry,
how transparently cynical he was, right?
Yes.
Quote, and like Huey Newton, he argued that the most genuine, quote, revolutionaries, unquote, were those who were most oppressed, black prison inmates and gangbangers, an idea that appealed strongly to white radicals yearning for a taste of black authenticity. Unlike Stokely Carmichael, Cleaver embraced white radicals who adored him.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a very like odd parasitic relationship. Again, these are all, they're either very young or very low IQ or both. So I guess, you know, you have to factor that in, that these are the kind of people we're talking about. So, you know, I have a little note here. They're like morons. They don't have very good fake IDs, for example.
Right.
And they're constantly getting pulled over by the police, probably because their cars are like super run down and have broken taillights and everything. And again, like, I'm sure they're being racially profiled, but like, well, yeah,
it worked.
Well, yeah, that's yeah. But you know, like, you do get the impression that like they're not,
they're
not like good at this. It's just that it's a crazy
compared to essentially Cuban intelligence in the form of the FALN.
Yes.
It's impossible to find them. And for like 10 years, they're like bombing on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And the FBI just cannot. Who are these people? Can't find them. Can't find them.
Right.
No fingerprints. Nothing.
Yeah. Whereas these guys are like, oh, yeah, we know who they are. Almost immediately. So, yeah, that's the Black Liberation Army. Super violent, like not really helping the cause of anything. You can kind of throughout the book,
just angry.
Yeah,
which is perhaps justified anger, but you know,
kind of. But like, well, the reason you're in jail, you keep committing crimes.
Yeah,
you know the other people that you live around, the black people that aren't in jail. You know why? They didn't commit any crimes. They didn't go raping people when they were 15. Like the people that like they get turned in by like just normal people living around them, right? It's like, oh yeah, there's a cop killer over there. I don't like cop killers. Go get them. So there's like all sorts of like radical black.
So we're gonna get to my favorite.
Yes, let's you take over.
Well, I don't want to take over.
No, go
you're
ahead.
Doing such a great job. No. Are we gonna get to the?
Yeah, I know who you want. Go ahead. Get to them.
Well, you know. Okay, so Symbionese Liberation
Army. There we go, yes. Why are they your favorite, Jerry?
Because they kind of stand out from all the others in that they are not really anything other than a cult.
Yes. Right?
Like they are, so again, they have the trappings and rhetoric of Marxist revolutionary stuff, but it's basically insane people.
Yeah.
Like literally
who
were treated right for mental illness, who have like notebooks with like, before they start any, you know, like step one is not, you know, figure out where you're going to have a safe house. No, step one is come up with the logos, come up with the structure and hierarchy and organizational chart for your republic that will emerge after the revolution, have fancy titles, have a 8-headed cobra symbol, right? Like that's like the priorities, right? Like
it is a pretty sweet cobra. So there are a few of these groups that are seemingly led by an actual retard, and this is one of them. Like yes. I get the impression that the guy leading the SLA is this like troubled soul named Donald DeFries or something, or just a black guy who's like running with the law, just like obviously like not very bright. even within like these people, right? Like you do get the impression that like not just crazy, but kind of stupid. But somehow manages to cobble together a group of mostly like he's the only black
other guy, right? Yeah.
So like this is another like African liberation group, except he's the only African. He's not African, he's a black guy. He's from like Sacramento or something, right? And you know, he cobbles together a bunch of like crazy lesbians and just violent married couples, basically. Yeah. What does Symbionese mean, Jerry?
Symbionese is basically a portmanteau of it's basically about symbiosis.
Yeah.
Right? Who's a symbiosis with? I have no idea.
Who knows? Yeah. So he just like makes up a word.
He makes up a word.
yeah.
And yeah, no, and so basically the reason like I think we would have forgotten about them. Like I'm sure that there were other insane groups like this, but for so like one thing that they had was persistence.
Yes, they were very persistent.
Anyhow, they kidnapped Patty Hearst.
Yeah.
Which is not a bad idea. And it was so easy. And Patty Hearst seems to be like an entitled little bitch who gets kidnapped. And they proceed to just so the kidnapper and the ransom is that they want the Hearsts to provide free food for everybody.
Yes.
Which even their wealth cannot cover.
Yeah.
And so then they're like, okay, we'll scale down our demands. We just want like free turkeys for the people in this neighborhood or something. Right.
Yeah.
Patty Hearst seems to be is kept locked in a closet with a hood on or something, and they are constantly interrogating her. And then they start indoctrinating her. Basically, they start talking to her. Then they start raping her.
Yeah.
So basically, whenever the Freeze, of course, decrees that you know in a revolutionary world there is free love, and basically if anybody asks you for sex you have to give it to them. Like it's not cool not to, to refuse.
Yeah.
And so they're all fucking each other all the time.
Yeah.
and then when he's refused he basically just goes and starts raping Hearst. And she just basically just sits there and she just proceeds to like just anyhow. So you can see that Patty Hearst, I can imagine, is very traumatized by this whole experience.
There is some controversy over what her role is and like what she was really thinking. But it's not hard to imagine she was essentially brainwashed and tortured into joining this group. Because she was held in a closet for like weeks. It wasn't like the next day she decided to join them. She was, you know, starved and beaten and raped and indoctrinated and feared for her life because like she, at that point, they said like, do you want to join us or you can leave? And she was like, yeah, I know what's going to happen if I say, can I go please? Like, I'm going to get murdered. So she joins the SLA, the Symbionese Liberation. Correct. By the way, right, we don't want to skip over the fact, the first act of black liberation from these geniuses is to kill the first black superintendent of Oakland Public Schools, which is like super endears them to like everybody, right? It's like, oh, he must be a racist pig because the schools are racist. And it's like,
his crime was putting forward a proposal to require school kids to carry ID.
Yes, right. He wanted to like impose some sort of like law and order on what I imagine were a little hectic situation there, right? Yeah. So they, Marcus Foster, they just straight up murder this guy. And are like, oh, hey, look at what we did. Does everyone love us now? And people were like, no, why did you do this? So they're already like immediately on the, again, retards. They're immediately on the back foot because of what they've done. So they need to like get their name back in good graces. So that I think that's why they kidnapped Patty Hearst. Well, who knows why?
Who knows?
Why? But yeah, so Patty Hearst joins She became codenamed Tanya. And, you know, yeah, she joins the group. She participates in the famous robbery. That's where, like, her picture is snapped, because these people, right, again, are just, like, really bad at this. They have wigs, but everyone is like, oh, that's Patty Hearst. So go on, Jerry. This is your favorite. So you can talk.
That's it. I mean, so yeah. The point is that they go on like this for a long time. They have other kind of actions, I guess. I'm trying to remember what they are. I don't think there are many. But the point is, they can. It ends up with them, very Waco-like, holding them. So basically, they, Patty Hearst and this married couple, and I guess maybe somebody else, they go to rob a bank, and that goes bad. And some people die, and Patty Hearst gets away. And then these people, the other ones, including Dumfries, eventually make it. He starts going, like, door to door asking for help. He literally goes door to door.
Yeah.
Because he thinks the FBI is like very close, and he needs help from somebody, but he has nobody. So he literally goes door to door saying, "Hi, I'm from the Symbionese Liberation Army, and I need help." And people just, like, slam the door in his face until he gets to somebody. Amazingly, it's a black Muslim woman who says, "Sure, I'll help you," and then proceeds to, like, rent him a house and, you know, secret them over there. Anyhow, the point is, they're running after this botched robbery. They go and they go into, like, what part of town? Is it Los Angeles? Yeah, it's in L.A.
Yeah, they're in L.A., yeah.
There's some not great part of town. They knock on a door where this woman is having a party at, like, 4 a.m. People are basically just high and listening to records. And he's like, me and my friends need to hang out here for a little while.
Can we crash for the night?
And she's like, "Are you fucking crazy?" And he's like, "Here's $200. Can we just crash for a night?" And she's like, "Okay."
Yeah, we need a whole book about this. I'm sure there was one written about this situation, but, like, these people in that house, it's like,
I can't, you have to read this. I'm not going to go through it blow by blow. People, like, have to read this. Yeah.
It's like these morons led by a retard militant show up at a house. It's the only house with lights on, right? Because, again,
right,
most black people, even in the 60s and 70s, just, like, go to work, go home, like, watch TV, go to the Grand Canyon, and go to sleep. They found the one house with lights on in the middle of the night with music playing, and they show up, and it's like a drug-addled alcoholic and her drug-addled alcoholic friend and their kids and then some other people. And it's like, "Hey, can we stay here?" "Nah. Here's a few $100. "Yeah, sure." Okay.
And so then they're like, "Okay, excellent. Let me just get some stuff from the car." And they proceed to go to a van and bring in boxes and boxes and boxes of ammunition, bombs, guns, and then just stack them there, right? And then they're basically waiting to get caught. I don't know what. So then this woman starts making gasoline bombs. She starts pouring gasoline into bottles.
Yes.
The point is that ultimately people around the neighborhood call the police. Police show up, and they decide that the way to escape is to hide inside the baseboards. But as soon as the first incendiary device goes through, the thing catches fire and they get incinerated.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's like an hours long standoff.
It's very long. The blow by blow is very,
it's very funny. I mean, it is funny. Like,
100%.
This is not this is not sophisticated. And, I mean, again, Donald DeFries, the King Retard, is
what was his code name?
Oh God. Is King Rex. I don't remember. Was it?
Go ahead.
Oh yeah. Sanko or yeah, whatever. Yeah, so key point, right? Tanya, right, Hurst is separate from these two at this group at this time, because she and another couple, like, there was a botched thing, as Jerry said, and they were not in the house because they had to split up because they effed up the bank robbery because they're stupid. So anyway, this is like through no effort of the police, right? At this point, like, people are trying, yeah. I guess, but like, it is just like stumbling on these things. It is like the guy that, it's like the TV show where he found oil in his backyard. Like, they did not find these people. The neighbors complained. Like, right. There's a bunch of crazies with guns in this house. Or like, my grandson says that a crazy man with a gun is living in my daughter's house. That's literally what happened. So like, thank you, LAPD. It's wonderful. Yeah, like Jerry said, there's a standoff, but like, people are like going in and out of this house. There's like no effort to conceal anything. The crazy white lesbians are building like gasoline bombs, like in this woman's house with her two little kids. No one seems to mind. Everyone is passed out drunk. Like, the entire LAPD descends on this neighborhood. There's like hundreds and hundreds of police and SWAT, and they still won't surrender. I mean, luckily the innocent people like leave before the house gets set on fire. But like, even as the house is like on fire, they will not leave. Like, a few of them like crawl out and immediately start shooting at I would just surrender at that point, but they don't. They try to shoot the police. The police kill them. But the rest of them like refuse to leave until the house falls in on them and they're all like burned to death. And it's like, that's it. That's them, basically. I mean, Patty Hearst is still kind of running around with the Harrises, this married couple of like, the guy is basically a violent psycho who beats and rapes everyone around him. And that goes on for a few more years until, you know, they're caught and Patty Hearst pees herself, apparently. and she goes on trial and like, she gets a few years and she gets like, I don't know, Jimmy Carter lets her out early or something.
Jimmy Carter commutes her sentence, and yeah. I think Bill Clinton pardons her ultimately.
Yeah, and she's like she's still an heiress, right?
Yeah.
Remember, she's like the heiress of like the Hearst fortune. So I think, like, I looked her up on Wikipedia. She just like does small acting roles and just kind of, you know, helps charities out. I mean, it's not great what she went through, right? So she was obviously like at some point like brutally brainwashed into this. Maybe she ended up liking it. Maybe she was just turned into this, but you know. So that's Jerry's favorite group. I mean, we're running out of time.
Yeah.
There's like the Puerto Ricans who are like more professional, as Jerry said, probably they're definitely being funded by Cuban intelligence, whether they're like being
funded and trained.
And
trained. And I mean, you know, I guess.
Yeah. So there's those guys, like, again, just incredible examples of just liberal guilt, white liberal tears, white liberal women tears, just running everything, controlling everything. Cause they are like they're also being funded by like the Episcopal Church because through their minority outreach efforts, because just like one lady who is pro, I don't know, Puerto Rico and revolutionary violence becomes like just the secretary of this office. And she just sends tens of thousands of dollars to these terrorists, and the FBI like cannot get her to talk. The Episcopal Church, like,
this is interesting,
isn't right? fully cooperative.
So yeah. This is interesting. So this woman basically becomes like the treasurer or like the finance lady of the Episcopal Church.
Yes, yeah, the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed of the FLN.
Exactly, and then begins to basically give grants from grant making fund, you know, accounts at the church to Hispanic social development charities, right? And community organizing charities, right? That's what she's doing. Of course, this is all money going to the FALN for bomb making. Now, whenever anybody at the Episcopal Church starts asking questions like, hey, so can I see this grant proposal? Or, you know, can I see that, you know, we need to get the accounting for the year done, like the audit. Can I see the books?
What's the FNA rate on that?
She basically, you know, they basically begin to play the race card And so the higher ups, in the Episcopal Church, are basically intimidated. It's just amazing to see these echoes just intimidated, and they're like basically like, we don't want racial trouble. Just don't ask questions. Just, you know.
You're like Episcopalians. Do you even have any Hispanic members? Like, it's well, like,
well, bingo.
White people in like
precisely why you don't want to. Asking
yeah sure yeah because Willie Hernandez the mad bomber is really going to go to your church service.
no what I mean is that it's a white guilt. It's like, sure, you don't want to, you know, you have three, what are you going to do, run them out? Jesus, what kind of racist? Then you're truly a racist organization.
That's true.
Anyhow, yeah, so the FALN goes quite deep. They go on for a long time, and they're never actually quite caught. And honestly,
well, they are caught
as I'm reading.
And then they escape.
As I'm reading this book, what keeps occurring to me is these people. Like, what would Stalin or Lenin think of these people? And like, they would have them for breakfast, right? Like,
probably, yeah.
These people, like they have kids and they're worried about their kids, and they you know, they're having orgies and like they're having petty squabbles about feminism and about, you know, like Lenin, Stalin, Ho Chi Minh, Che would just like wear their skins, right? The one guy who I think actually is revolutionary here is the FALN bomb maker.
Yeah.
Right? Who, after making hundreds of bombs, finally makes a mistake, and his face is blown off. He's like half blinded. He loses all his fingers, I guess, except his thumb.
He's got one thumb left.
He's got one thumb left and whatever. And so when he like comes to, he is like half blinded, he's bleeding, he is probably deaf at this point, has one thumb. He proceeds to do what? To like try to clean up his entire workshop, right? To like get rid of all of the evidence, then proceeds to turn on the gas in such a way that when the police come in, it'll blow up the place so he can take out some police in his dying act. Okay. Of course, the people who come are firemen, and they don't get blown up, and he gets arrested, and he's put in jail. He proceeds to escape.
Yeah.
He has wire cutters, or he digs?
So
using his stubs?
No, he doesn't dig using his stubs. So he still has no hands. This is where the radical lawyers come in, and I don't know if you feel both like, oh, these people are having fun, the radical lawyers. But on the other hand, I want them all exterminated. But fine. His radical lawyer lady smuggles in wire cutters, right. Supposedly.
Allegedly.
Never been confirmed. Allegedly. Mm-hmm. Where this is all alleged, even though it totally happened. Because these are not actually lawyers. They're just people with law degrees who are terrorists. But anyway, So this lady smuggles in wire cutters. He's in a hospital. He's in like a jail cell in a hospital. I don't think he's in jail yet because he's like pretty mangled up still. So he is snipping the wires on his like third story window. The guard who's supposed to be guarding him, you know, a la Epstein, is asleep at them, you know, because again, this is the 70s and nothing works. Apparently at all. And so he manages to shimmy out using some bed sheets, slips, falls on a air conditioning unit, like fucks up his kidney, and then climbs down a ladder again with stumps. He's got like one thumb,
half blind,
probably still not in great shape, not feeling good, escapes. These people are being rescued. It doesn't seem very hard, to be honest, right? There are people trying to rescue him from prison. I guess it's still the FAL.
Break him out.
Yeah. So he's broken out, although it seems like easier to like get out of this jail than it is to like leave school during the middle of the day if you're in school. he gets out. So like the big bust that the police had, this guy who was obviously the bomb maker because the bomb blew up in his face, escapes with no hands. And they can't find him. Yeah.
All right. So should we put a bow on this?
Yeah.
So yeah, so we let's go. Let's do the compare and contrast. Yeah, what did you want to say about that?
Oh, to network?
To Undercover Brother? No. To present day.
Oh, present day. I mean, just reading the book again, right? It's how, like, how retarded everything is, right? It's the retardation. Like, these are not serious revolutionaries. These are not serious people. They're treated as such by,
But you can imagine that. You can imagine
libtards, right?
Yeah. No, but but look, in our current environment, right?
Yeah.
Which is pretty comfortable.
Very comfortable.
What you will. It's very, very, very comfortable. Who is going to have the incentive is not the right word, but the will. Who is going to have the will to actually take some extreme action? I think it's going to be morons, people of low IQ, essentially, or people who are insane,
yeah,
for some reason, right? It's because anybody who is sane and intelligent is going to know that revolution or assassination isn't going to really accomplish much of anything.
Yeah, usually the opposite will happen.
Exactly.
Which is kind of what happened.
I think in 1917, am I right? 1918? 1917? 19? Russia.
Go on.
You can totally see how revolutionary action would lead to a result. Okay? You can see it, right? Today, it's not. So, yeah. So who...
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously not the same level. Like, one of the points of the book is, like, bombs were going off, like, every week.
Yeah.
Like, hundreds and hundreds of bombs a year, actually.
In the 70s, yeah.
Yeah, usually not hurting anybody, but occasionally, you know, killing and maiming. And we don't really have anything like that. Even Antifa, I mean, unless the media, the lamestream media is hiding all of their shenanigans, like... Yeah. You kind of know where those people are. They're just throwing bricks at a courthouse in Seattle and Portland for the last 6 years.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and you know, even the crazies that try to assassinate Trump, it is like you said, like, oh, these are crazy people. Like, they're not revolutionaries. They're just.
Yeah. Low IQ and or.
Low IQ incel or. Just you know, TDS Redditards, yeah. Right? And so, I guess in a way, it is kind of similar to back then, except that there is no—I mean, the resistance, right? There is no like underground movement made up of people who dropped out of like Columbia and Harvard. Not really.
And what is that a function of? Is it just the surveillance state that we have now? Has to be, right?
I think that's part of it. It's just like not as bad as it was in the 70s and 60s. And you can actually go to jail now, like you said. Like, I don't know how long you could get away with those people got away with. I just don't think you could. So yeah, like, I mean, there are those like movements. They're all infiltrated by the FBI, right?
Yeah.
So like the people that supposedly were going to kidnap the governor of Michigan, right? It was like 80% FBI agents or right. Allegedly or whatever. So like whenever something like that does crop up or pop up, it's like all glowies. So it's like, and that's surprising that like these things don't happen. But I think you're right. It is going to be led by morons, or the only people doing these things are going to be like brain addled, you know, room temperature IQ types. But you know, what day it is, whatever day it is, you know, on the right, you have people like Nick Fuentes, who I've never heard say a single word. All I know is like his fans are groypers. They're all anti-Semites and they're stupid. I don't know about him, but like his fans are generally morons. And you're seeing a very similar thing where, I mean, there's a lot of pushback on this, but there are attempts to maybe normalize this type of behavior or that type of thinking with like that, well, they're just, you know, they're just kids. They're struggling and they're upset and their needs aren't being met by society.
Right.
You know, so it's a very similar response just from the other side. And you know, the way things ended up for the left, you know, or just, you know, I think actually things ended up very well for the left, but I'm not sure Weatherman and BLA and SLA and all these people had anything to do with it. In fact, it probably hurt the left to have people like that. So you could also imagine it would maybe hurt the right in general to have people like Nick Fuentes kind of coddled mm-hmm. and his followers who are generally stupid, coddled. Whether leaving alone whatever nuanced conversation about Israel we're supposed to have, like you can have that without, you know, coddling people like that in the same way that you can have conversation and legislation about civil rights or the Vietnam War without resorting to a murdering policeman in New York and just blowing up toilets at the Pentagon. Because I don't know if I see.
Would you agree with this that if you do not allow for subtle discussions about Israel,
subtle, you mean nuanced?
Sorry, nuanced, not subtle. if you don't allow for nuanced discussion, right? If any question about Israel is raised, it's immediately shut down. That actually feeds these elements.
Yes, it probably does. I mean, I don't think it's direct. I think it just creates an atmosphere of like, this is taboo. I'm so cool. I'm so bad. It's like the MAGA,
exactly.
The MAGA secret handshake. It's like, it's two things.
It's more one, it becomes punk, it becomes edgy. Yes. So it becomes attractive. Oh, you mean I can't talk about this? Why not? Let me find out. Let me go read. And since I can't read the nuanced discussion in the pages of National Review, I guess I need to go find out.
Yeah,
why, right. You know, it is. Where am I going to go? Oh, look at this pamphlet I found. Okay.
Look at this pamphlet. Look at this manlet, this gay twink online that hates Jews. Yeah. I don't think it's like direct. It's like, oh, I can't talk about Israel, therefore I'm a groiper.
No, I think it creates
an atmosphere.
But
on the other hand, it's not like civil rights and the war in Vietnam.
No.
We're not like being discussed. So like, I think you're always going to have like a lunatic fringe.
Yeah.
It's just that like we don't have the same gatekeepers anymore. So you get people like that.
Yes.
And it's just easier to like have those people.
That fringe could be more easily dismissed if they if there was no attract, like how do I put this, if you don't provide a space to have a conversation,
mm-hmm.
people are going to go find that space somewhere.
Yeah. Right?
And so, well, yeah, what I'm saying is to the extent there is a conservative movement or a conservative, you're right. There are no gatekeepers the way that they used to be.
There are some, but like not to the same extent, right? This is not network, right? Which we should talk about.
But there are, how do I put this? There are gatekeepers. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. There's still.
Oh yeah, I agree.
There's still gatekeeping.
It's called the Israel lobby. Say the name.
There's still gatekeeping that shuts down any nuanced conversation.
No, okay. But it's like it's called the Israel lobby.
And they're not gatekeepers in the sense that
this
conversation is still going to happen. It's just today it's not going to happen in mimeographed pamphlets. It's going to happen in a way that's way more
possibly even dumber.
Well, dumber, but people are going to be able to find themselves. People are going to be able to seem, anyhow.
I think it's like a little deeper conversation about like,
like
even if you are a friend of the Jews, as we are both, and a friend of Israel, which you are. I'm fine with the Zionist entity. It's fine. I have family living there. Like, I don't want all the Israelis murdered by Hamas, right? But it's not like these conversations don't happen. They're just on the fringes, purposely on the fringes, because they were pushed out of polite conversation by by pro-Israel donors. It's how is that like even controversial to say? It is if you're very pro-Israel and don't want this coming out. But like, put that aside. I think it is a problem if you can't discuss these things. Every group has their taboos. That's one of them. I don't know why things are burbled up in the way that they have, where like this becomes an issue and a topic, except that like pro-Israel types, they're a mirror image of the anti-Israel types in that they make everything about Israel. So like maybe if you stop doing that, it would become less of a sore point or whatever. Now, I don't know if that's going to make Nick Fuentes into, he's not going to be going on.
No, my point is that he's going to be what he's going to be.
Yeah.
But he becomes less relevant and like, he just becomes one more voice in the sea of garbage that is X or whatever.
Yes. And YouTube. Yeah.
And YouTube. Right. Like, yes.
Yeah. But I mean, it's, you know, anti-Semitism is like always going to be popping up and coming around. But yes, I think there are ways of dealing with it that, you know, it could be handled much better. Now, it might mean that Israel can't get away with everything it wants to, and like, but they want to get away with those things. So you're always going to be, you know, in tension with whoever, right? Like, American Zionists are not the same thing as Israel, and there are people in Israel who probably don't appreciate the direction that, say, Lindsey Graham wants to take the party, right? That's the problem, is like it's all become like a major league clown show at every level, and this is one of those issues where it's just clowns on both sides. Like, you just have mouth breathing retards on both sides. And they're the ones who get all the airtime. Yeah.
And we don't have time to get to network. But I also think that there might be kind of internal contradictions in what people want, that they don't want to think about or much less discuss in the pages of whatever August journals they put out, right?
I mean, this is a conversation. We're talking about the right. On the left, there's all sorts of wackos everywhere, right? And there are people who are pro-Israel who are still very maybe Zionist. Obviously, people who are not, everywhere in between. It's one of those topics that the emotion is drained out of it every year because old people are dying.
They're the
people that have memories. I mean, not even of World War II, that's so far away, but like of Israel fighting wars to achieve independence and stay independent, fighting off, you know, everybody basically around them and winning and building the country up as an underdog. But like every year, more and more of those people die. They're old.
Yeah.
And they're being replaced with people who just don't give a fuck. It's just not emotionally resonant, because emotions play such a role in politics that like it's no longer the default for like 80% of the population. And I'm not sure American Jews and Zionists are grappling with that. Like, you're losing because you're losing the like emotional oomph, and you need to get it back somehow. And the attacks in October 23 like didn't do it for whatever reason. Maybe because October 7th. Yeah, we'll call it that, which is another, you know, this is obviously like propaganda, but whatever, right? It's like you're trying to link it to 9/11, right?
Wait, what?
Calling it October 7th is like calling it September 11th.
No, yes, but you call, I'm sorry, Stanley.
It is, right?
Stop. I'm not too sure about that, but you said October 23rd. Did you mean to
2023?
Oh, got it. Yes.
Yeah, no, not October 23rd.
You said October 23rd.
Oh, I thought I said 23.
Oh, 2023.
Yeah. October 2023. Yeah. So like, you know, people start noticing these things because it's the emotions just aren't there anymore. And you know, I don't want Israel destroyed either. I don't want all these people killed. I believe they should exist. Fine, whatever. But like, they need, the American Zionists and Jews in general need to find like a better way of talking about these things. If there's any hope of like what's looking more and more likely is about to happen, doesn't happen, right? I don't know if it's going to fix anything, because, you know, people are retarded, and anti-Semitism is like fucking, it's like catnip to retards. Like, they love it. right? For whatever reason, it's just like one of those things that is just possibly forever, you know, going to come up. But, you know, again, Jerry, on the other hand, it's not like people weren't talking about civil rights and Vietnam. And these people still went crazy and blew stuff up. So, like, you can't satisfy everybody. And if the Groypers are just anti-Jew, then, like, fixing the IDF's, you know, target acquisition protocol algorithm is, like, I don't think that's going to satisfy Nick Fuentes,
right?
You know, yeah. or any of those people. But, like you said, maybe it just takes the air out of the balloon. I don't know. It's...
Yeah. All right, so should we talk about
network? No, there's not.
Who knew? I thought we weren't going to have much.
Well, you wanted to bring up a very contentious issue. Yeah.
No, you're the one. I was shocked you brought up. I thought, boy, you know, we're going to be the one podcast that isn't going to discuss Nick Fuentes.
I don't want to discuss. Who is this guy? He's like a moron on
YouTube. Again, as you say, I've never heard a word by this guy.
I mean, I've heard of him, and I've heard of
Groypers. Yeah, I've heard of him, but I've never heard of him.
But it's like, I don't know what's wrong with Tucker. I mean, I guess I do know what's wrong with Tucker, but like, every time you see these people on Twitter, I refuse to call it X, they're like the dumbest. It's incredible. They're like the dumbest people in the world. They're almost like bots, except I think they're real. And it's just like, that's where I'm like, I'm not sure talking about Israel is going to help like that level of like retardation.
Yes.
You know what I mean? It's like, no, these are just like crazies. You just ignore them.
No, but
you can have a more nuanced conversation for other reasons. Yeah, but
again, it's not that it's going to satisfy them, right?
I would sick Mossad on them.
It's not that it's going to satisfy them. Okay. It's that they would never be thinking about this question if it was one more thing that's, you know, reasonably discussed and debated.
Maybe. I mean, I just think he's a straight up anti-Semite.
No, not him, but you it's his followers, right? Why are his followers, et cetera, right? It's because, not because, I mean, there's many
because
of
the
many Gaza reasons.
War. Because of the...
there are many reasons.
The okay? Oslo Accords. But that's why I'm a Groyper.
If you're told, you can't talk about something.
Yeah.
This is taboo.
Sure.
That makes it sexy. That's my point. It's not that, right? So yeah. I'm saying take the sex out of it. No. Speaking of sex.
Yeah, speaking of sex, quickly. Network, great movie, watched it again.
Yeah.
You know, it touches kind of tangentially on this, but more than like the radical chic element, because that's not really in it when you think about it. It's just like the general insanity of the 70s. I know it's a satire, but like it is, it's wild, right?
It's such a good movie.
It is a good movie.
It's like a perfect movie. Yeah. Just beat by beat.
Yeah,
like nothing is wasted. Like it's, you know, yeah. What do we want to say about it?
I mean, we're not at that point, right? It's there's no appetite. Well, actually, there is, right? Like Donald Trump is Howard Beale, right? He is the articulating. He's the prophet articulating the popular rage.
Yeah.
Except, you know, first is tragedy, second time is farce. So we get Donald instead of Howard. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I don't know if it's being done cynically or not. I don't even understand the whole Donald Trump thing, like what's going on in that big, beautiful head of his. But like there are those echoes. It just seems like so much dumber and like it's not popular. It's, what is it? It's like countercultural, right? Like that movie makes it seem like everybody is mad as hell, right?
Mm-hmm.
But you get the impression now that it's just a bunch of losers, right? I mean, there's some discussion of that, like in the August pages of our magazines about like the Trump phenomena, MAGA, do we want to reach out to these voters? I mean, that was like the thing everyone wrote for 2 weeks after he won the first time. And then everyone decided his voters are all racists. But like that movie is talking about like a real popular rage. Whereas Donald, the way it's framed, it's just deplorables, right? So I think that's like the big, a big difference between those two. I don't know where that leads or anything, but like, but like, you know, also just like the cynical manipulation of of culture, the greed, the death of the individual, and how everything is just a business. That stuff is amazing, and you know, they should play that in like business school or in economics programs or something. Yeah.
So if Trump is Howard, who is Mr. Jensen?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, Israel, Jerry. the Arabs, KSM, what's his name? MBS.
MBS.
Right. The Arabs, right?
Yeah.
I think it's just a good movie to watch. I mean, I thought there would be a little bit more resonance, but like, it is just like, it's so cynical.
Yeah.
And the black militants, the Ecumenical Liberation Army, they're so cynical. And I mean, I don't know, like, if it's saying like those people are just as like greedy as Diane and everyone else.
I think there's a distinction, because there is the Ecumenical Liberation Army led by the great Syed Khan, which is basically the Symbionese Liberation Army led by whatever that guy's name was. It's clearly a moron leading this thing, and they kidnap another heiress, right?
Right.
So there's that, but then there is their above ground, sort of contact to the network, who is the Communist Party lady.
Right.
Who I think is supposed to be, what's her face? Angela Davis.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And she's the one who is cynical and, you know, ultimately capitalist, right?
Well,
he's
like in that scene in their like farmhouse, right? Where he's discussing the contract. He's like, I don't think he's stupid. Everyone's like portrayed like, oh, they're just like big, dumb, lumbering radicals. But like, he's like a lawyer, but he has the mind of like a contract lawyer. And so does she. I think the point is like these Diane and what she represents ruins everything. His friend. That's what he tells her. Like, you destroy everything you touch, which is true, as we've learned from our books on TV. But I don't know if it has that much to say. I think it's just about like,
I like how Mr. Jensen towards the end of his sermon to Howard says, "The time has come to say." Is dehumanization such a bad word?
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, he's super sinister. He's like a roly-poly. It's interesting, right? You think these people are just like stupid. Until that moment, you kind of imagine like he's like the younger brother of somebody, and he's just sitting there as like a face, and behind him are people that know what they're doing, but like, no, he is like the driving force. He's like a maniac. And the same thing with like the militants, like, oh, you just think they're like, she's a communist spouting garbage, and he is like some thug black guy eating fried chicken, but like, nope, they're all incredibly bright. Unlike reality. Just like, yeah. So, I don't know how much it has to say about Days of Rage, but I guess it has something to say about like that time and TV and media and all that, and capitalism, Jerry, and the Jews. It's it might be worth watching. I mean, it's worth watching.
Oh, 100%. So if you've never seen that movie,
with the book, maybe too. But
it's the same universe.
It helps to set the scene.
It helps. Yes, you get to feel, if you watch the movie, when you read the book, you feel the stickiness and sweatiness, and you see all the brown tones to everything.
Yes, everyone is very sweaty.
Yeah, but if you haven't seen that movie, run, don't walk. It's one of my favorite movies.
I'll be on the Nick Fuentes Hour discussing it. me and pick another. Oh, there's so many weirdos now. Me and Martyr Maid.
Anyhow. Well, speaking of weirdos, Stanley.
Yeah.
So I guess first we should say you recommend the book, you recommend the movie.
Terrific. Yeah.
Okay. So next time, Stanley, on a very special episode, because next time, Stanley, it will be our 100th episode.
Unless we believe it.
Unless we can't. Unless we get assassinated
by on Mossad. Live.
Maybe that's what'll happen on the 100th episode. Maybe we'll be assassinated on tape.
Well, okay. We're, are we live streaming?
We'll be wearing tuxedos.
Okay. Is Vox Populi going to be there?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah.
We will be reading my pick, Applied Elite Theory by Nima Parvini.
Yes.
So very exciting. This is a new release.
Speaking of anti-Zionism, Jerry, uh-huh. Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. We've read two of his before.
Yep. This is the third in this cycle.
This is Applied.
This is Applied.
I think it's just a collection of his essays, but I think whatever.
It is.
Whatever.
But I think he weaves it. So.
Sure.
I haven't read them, so it will be fine.
I didn't know he had any. I thought he just... had a YouTube channel.
Oh, Stanley, come on. You don't just have a YouTube channel. You also have a Substack.
He does have classes. I know that.
Yes.
He sells those. Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay.
Since nobody's able to actually put elite theory into practice at any level in this environment right now, maybe we'll get some hints. I'm sure it involves running a think tank and then constantly putting your foot in your mouth.
these are not the elites. So
these are not the elites we're looking for.
All right, Stanley.
Yes.
See you next time.
All right, Jerry. Bye.